Go to the gallery to look at art? Okay. What happens when the art starts looking back? We talk with Matthew Akers about Marina Abramović, The Artist is Present, on this episode of Mighty Movie Podcast.
Performance is all about state of mind. The hardest thing is to do something which is close to nothing, because it's demanding all of you.
She is directly and boldly challenging an audience.
Art is beautiful. Art is not beautiful.
She needs the audience like air to breathe.
There's only one question I didn't hear since 10 years. Why is this art?
She slows everybody's brain down. She transforms us as a result.
This show in MoMA is important. I want to be a real form of art before I die.
Marina Abramović, The Artist is Present, means she will be present.
Marina, are you nervous about the show at the MoMA?
Incredibly.
And when you're sitting in the chair, what are you looking at?
Anybody who sits in front of me, it's just the gaze.
Seven half hours, 6 days a week, motionless.
Wow. It's a matter of time before firing someone in the face is going to be hard.
This is about limits, even for me.
Hey, and welcome to MMP. I'm Dan Persons. The main focus of the documentary, Marina Abramović, The Artist is Present, is a 2010 retrospective of the controversial performance artist's work presented by New York's Museum of Modern Art. But that's not the half of it. While the film does cover a bit of Abramović's background and her preparations for the exhibition, where the film really comes together is in the observation of the main piece for the show, an original performance in which Abramović sits in a chair, silent, expressionless, as museum visitors sit opposite her, beholding the artist and being beheld. As documented by director Matthew Akers' cameras, it's a surprisingly powerful, emotional experience, not just for the spectators/spectated, but also for viewers of the film. So here's my interview with Akers. A content note, Akers refers to a person named Ulay in the interview. He's Abramović's longtime collaborator. And a few technical notes, there's a buzz in the soundtrack at points, doesn't obscure the conversation. Plus, I managed not only to mispronounce Abramović's name a few times, but also get the title of the exhibition wrong at one point. So it's a hat trick. I'm looking at it as a learning experience, okay? Here comes the interview. A film about two people sitting and looking at each other. Totally ripped off from My Dinner with Andre. How could you?
Well, actually, no, because there's no dialogue.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. I forgot about that. Forgive me.
One extremely crucial element.
Yes, exactly.
The lack of dialogue. That's the whole point, after all.
Yeah. So how did you get involved with this? Did they come to you with this? Were you always interested in Marina Abramović?
Well, I knew about her a bit. So what happened, it was very spontaneous. The producer of the film, Jeff Dupre, was seated between her and Klaus Biesenbach at a dinner party in the summer of 2009, I think in August. And they were talking over him about the retrospective they were going to do 7 months later. And so he was intrigued and said to Marina, you know, I'd like to make a film about this. And she said, well, I'm waiting for David Lynch to call. And, of course, that was a pipe dream. He was never going to call. So a couple weeks later, I had actually just finished a production on a series that I was doing with Jeff's company, Circus, which was a six-hour show on PBS. And I walked into the office, and he had met Marina, and he told me about this encounter. And I knew about her because I went to art school, and I studied her, and I'd seen like a little mini retrospective that of her collaborative work with Ulay at PS1 like 10 years prior to that. And so we talked a little bit about it, but I didn't think about it, working on a film. And but I did say, you know, this sounds like a really good project, like, you know, you should pursue it. And he was planning on it. And so he sort of got MoMA on board, and he went and met with Marina and sort of tied up the loose ends. And then called me a couple weeks later and said that he had found out she had invited these 36 reperformers up to her state, her house upstate, and was going to do this training exercise called cleaning the house. And would I be interested in going and filming that and working on it? And I said, no. And my reasoning was because Jeff was skeptical of performance art, but I was really skeptical. I mean, I'd seen her work, but I had always made things that were, as a painter and a sculptor, were meant to last. And, you know, I knew performance was ephemeral, and so I'd never seen a film about a performance artist that I liked, or I didn't even really know of any, for that matter. And I just spent a year trying to convince clowns and acrobats to let me into their trailer. And that was a very insular world, and I was frankly just worn out. I think I shot and produced that show, and I think with the other camera person, we shot 2,500 hours of footage. We just killed ourselves. So he said, look, she's extremely charming. You're going to love her. Just go up and meet with her and shoot this 1 week and see what you think. And there's no money. I wasn't getting paid a salary or anything, so I was like, okay, fine. I'll just do this 1 week, and we'll cut a trailer, and it sounds interesting anyways, because, you know, she's going to, like, almost like a witch cast her spell over these people, and they can't eat or speak for 3 days. That'll be interesting. So I'll go up. And so I went, and I went a day before the reperformers arrived, and I met Marina, and we immediately hit it off. Just as Jeff had hit it off with her at the dinner, you know, she charms the pants off of everyone she meets. And I said to her that day, I was like, you know, look, I'm skeptical of this. You know, we've told you that we're really excited about this new historic retrospective you're going to have, and that you're going to have this enormous platform at the Museum of Modern Art. But that said, you know, I do think that every artist has their myth. And, you know, as a responsible journalist, I'm going to not go about demythologizing you, but I, you know, whatever path this leads us down, like, I want to be able to be led there. I don't want, you know, so I'm not saying that, you know, I'm going to debunk your myth, but, you know, I'm not out to make a hagiography. And I think she liked that. She was like, okay, well, you know, I've been faced with this question. Is this art? And, you know, am I for real my whole life? So bring it on. And, you know, that's totally fine. And then also, I told her about my experience with the circus, and I said, I just can't, especially since there's no money and, you know, this is a big risk on all our parts. I just can't spend a year sort of tracking you down. So, and she's like, look, I'm going to give you keys to my apartment. Don't worry. And like about a week later, she did. She said, you will never be restricted. I'll never, you know, and that's like a dream. I mean, no subject I've ever filmed with has ever given me keys to their apartment and said, you know, just come on in. You know, and I wasn't even expecting that. That was beyond my wildest expectations. So, you know, it was like this amazing opportunity, and, you know, just couldn't pass it up. And then every week after that, something incredible was happening. I think Ulai came into town the next week, and so I filmed that. And it 12 months had gone by, and I'd given up a year's worth of my work opportunities and spent my life savings, and then Show Force had invested quite a large sum of money, and we were on literally our last breath, and HBO came in and believed in the project, and Sheila sat with Marina, had an experience, saw some of our footage, and you know, we were able to finish it. But you know, it's just really been a dream.
You know, you express some doubts about the validity of performance art, and I can understand that. What struck me as interesting about the approach here, and I wasn't checking my watch, it strikes me that the film is essentially broken into two separate parts. One is sort of the history of Marina and the work up to the exhibition. The other part is the exhibition, specifically the artist is watching the... Joe Pace Box.
Well, it's actually not that. It's not a biopic. It's not... So what we realized is that we weren't going to make an academic film. We weren't going to introduce her oeuvre and the 40 years of work. I mean, that would have been an exhaustive survey and a film that would have lasted for hours and hours. What we realized that we had to, like the artist is present, pare down. And I didn't just make... When we were in production, I wasn't just filming her and her process. I was filming the reperformers. I was filming the public's experience. I was going home with those people. I really went into all kinds of terrain thinking that that would all possibly be useful. And so when we got into the edit, we had to figure out what is the story we want to tell. And the story really became about the artist's present, that work. And then we sort of backtracked and we said, okay, this is a challenging genre of art. Most people have a sort of skeptical, knee-jerk reaction when they hear performance art, just as we do and did. And now we do truly believe that the artist's present was a powerful work and that it did have a transformative effect on a lot of people. So now how do we tell that story and what is it that informs that work? And what we realized was there were certain key elements from certain key works of her past that we wanted to touch on. And we also, because we were trying to make this film for the broadest audience possible, we needed to at least introduce who she was to prepare you for what you're about to see. And so you buy into, like we did, the artist is present. So the experience we had when we first got access and were told we could make this film, going into the research phase and really learning about her and sort of beginning to sort of see how some of, you know, we would study some of these early works and wouldn't really get it. And it would take like months for us to sort of, after we did interviews and all the reading we did, and we started to really understand what she was communicating within each of these works and how that informed the artist's present. And it did, you know, there, that the artist's present really embodies everything she's been working towards her whole life. But we didn't have time to say everything she's been working towards her whole life, so we had time to sort of elucidate some of the key concepts, and that's what we try to do. So it really is just to sort of give you a slight introduction to her and performance art, see some of her process, introduce some of those concepts, and then get into the performance art. So I would say there's probably three acts, though. There's the two acts that we just talked about, and then there's also the love story, which we haven't talked about. But so that was really the goal of the film. And I mean, I hope that people understand that we weren't, that of course we could have made an academic film, but we didn't. So even when we talk about Rhythm Zero, we don't go into Rhythm Zero quite extensively. It's just to give you what we consider to be the most important bit of information that you need in order to understand what that, you know, her challenging herself, the public completing the work, her pushing herself to her physical and emotional and psychological limits. So some of those things are why we chose certain works from her past.
You certainly didn't create an academic film.
Right.
And in terms of what you did make, and this surprised me because I go into these screens, I don't know much about Marina Abramović. I didn't know anything about Marina Abramović. And so knowing what the artist is present was going to be, my vision of it is that I could see it as being a confrontational thing. That was sort of my... that was sort of my expectation. That's sort of the way that performance art tends to go, I think, a lot of the time. That's not what you do get out of it. It, as you mentioned, it is depicted as a transformative experience. Were you anticipating that? Did you? Was this something that you actually witnessed?
It is something that I witnessed. You know, I think she sat down and her intention was to give to each and every person that sat in front of her unconditional love. And that isn't something that she's necessarily done her whole life. I mean, she certainly has done confrontational work, stuff that relates to more specifically to her upbringing as a commentary on the war-torn area she came out of, or her war-torn upbringing, the lack of love she had as a child and various things like that. But you can see, though, the trajectory of that shift from confrontation to something else, something that's more uplifting, something that has a more positive message, something that has something to say about where we are culturally, where we need to go, you know, how we, in general, have a lack of true connection through all, you know, the sort of the over-mediated culture that we live in. And so, you know, I mean, it's not like it just came out of nowhere. I mean, she certainly, you can see that with House of the Ocean View, where she offered herself up on those shelves in that space, and people did come, and they did have sort of a communal experience with her, where they sat and spent long periods of time with her. And so I think that was sort of the beginning, and this was the completion. It was a natural place it needed to go.
You know, just as an aside, she starts off the exhibition the initially with a table between her and the other person. That table eventually gets removed. Is there an issue of being of the vulnerability that in some ways protects her?
Does the vulnerability protect her in some strange way? It's hard for me to know how to answer that. I mean, I think she's pretty fearless. I don't know if she is protected at any point. Certainly anyone could do whatever they wanted to at any within that they were physically capable of, being surrounded by guards and so forth. And, you know, she does make herself vulnerable. She does, and they do too, though. I mean, the public is also vulnerable, so there's this reciprocity occurring. And maybe what you're saying is that through her vulnerability, she disarms others, so they themselves in turn become vulnerable, and that's a form of protection in a way, I guess. I mean, there's a lot of layers to that work. You know, she's sitting there and she's making herself vulnerable, and she's offering unconditional love, but she's also taking. Mm-hmm. You know, she's also desperately needs that love that's being given back to her. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she lives such a manic life, and it's somewhat on display in the film before she sits down. I mean, she's constantly moving and she's constantly talking, and so in a way, when she sits, that's the moment where she can finally rest and mm-hmm. finally be present herself and actually follow her own dictum, which is, you know, in calling everyone else to be present, she gets to call herself to be present. And so I think it's also the way that she protects herself from the rest of her life, frankly. And I think she needs these performances. And also, there's an interesting thing. I think that it's not that she's becoming stronger and stronger with each new performance. I think she's becoming weaker and weaker, frankly. I think she's becoming more emotionally available and open. And it's sort of like a wound that just opens wider and wider and wider. And she's just giving of herself. And so I think that that's why these performances become more and more challenging and more emotional, frankly. I think everything that she did sort of earlier, which was seemed like more confrontational and a little bit harsher and stronger, has gone to the complete opposite end of the spectrum, and now is like this overwhelming openness for everyone to sort of take a piece of. And so that's something I witnessed.
I was also wondering, you do mention her becoming weaker and weaker, and as it's pointed out in the film, she is doing this 7.5 hours a day,
6 hours on Friday.
10 hours on Friday, 6 days a week. She is not a young person, and it's shown that this is, you know, much as people may not believe it, but it is shown that this is a physical strain for her. It's the documentary filmmaker's dilemma. You're there beholding this and understanding what's going on. Is there ever any thought on your part to intervene, or do you observe?
Well, it's not my place to, and there are other people around, and, you know, obviously if I was in a war zone and someone was shot in front of me, you know, and there was no one else around, I think that I would have a different perspective. But this is, you know, there were guards there and a lot of people. So, I mean, I did feel like my role was to document what was happening rather than to intervene. And also, I mean, she's someone that just will never give up. So I thought that there was a very, very slight chance that something might occur, that she might not be able to make it. But also, knowing how she's always been, I just I felt like that was extremely unlikely. And she told me flat out, point blank, that she would never give up. that that would never even be something she would consider. And, you know, this performance, which is a variation of Night Sea Crossing that she did with Ulai, is the most difficult form of performance that she's ever done. And Ulai talks about it in the film quite clearly about how sitting motionless, fasting, and silent is the most difficult thing one can do. I mean, just try to sit motionless and be still and with yourself. And so it's not just it's the physical feat, but it's also the psychological feat. It's the emotional feat. It's all of these things combined. But certainly the physical part is extremely excruciating. And he got to a point where he had to give up. I mean, it's the only performance he ever failed at. You know, he stood up and he claims that his bones were actually like going through his skin at one point. So, you know, there is a moment in the film where she's in a lot of pain, and I can't even imagine. I mean, my level of pain would just be, I think, something unbearable, but I can't imagine what she was going through truly. I mean, it's not too obvious. It's not that evident. I mean, she still keeps it together quite well, but she must have, for her to say anything, she must have just been in an unbearable level of pain. And it's funny because now she talks about how she realizes that she should have put armrest on the chair. What was she thinking? slight design flaw there.
Next time.
Yeah.
You know, the goal of the film itself, or your intent with the film, usually you do a documentary about the creation of the artwork, and you see the artwork being created, and at the end of the film, there's the artwork, you know, and, you know, maybe, you know, you get the people reacting to it. It's still about the artwork. With this film, you have, I mean, within the context of when the event happened, you have the artwork, you have Marina, and you have the people and what they are bringing into it. But the film itself takes a larger view, and it encompasses the reaction of the public, the anticipation of the public. So does the film become an extension, another translation of what Marina does?
Absolutely. And, this was the challenge, because we knew that the medium, performance art, is ephemeral. So we couldn't possibly hope to capture the true, authentic experience of witnessing that performance, being in that space, being present for that performance firsthand. So the challenge was, so what do we do? Because we're not here necessarily just to make documentation, because the documentation is not any more authentic than if we just create some sort of artifice that's more of a subjective point of view it becomes its own thing and lives on its own. And so that was, I think, our decision ultimately was we need to, through sound design and music and editing, create an artifice, a subjective artifice, that is its own experience. And so it's sort of like an onion, and you peel all these layers. And while we're making a film about her art, and her art is certainly in the film, hopefully it's its own art or its own experience. So, you know, we use the tools in the filmmaker's toolbox to heighten the experience we had. So you get some sort of semblance of what we experienced being there firsthand. And that was what the decision ultimately was. Not to just make a purely verite fly in the wall, quote unquote, which doesn't exist, by the way, anyhow, but to make a verite documentation of that experience. It had to be something else.
It's a cliche question. I'll ask it anyway. Were you transformed by the experience?
No, without a doubt. Not only am I no longer a skeptic of the power of performance art, certainly that performance. I think there's just still a lot of bad performance art out there, and I'm not chomping at the bit to go to every single invitation I get to see performances, but certainly if Marina calls, I'll go. But also just on so many other levels, you know, and I'm still learning things from the film. Even though I had a very large role in making the film, I still feel like every time I watch it, I learn something new, and it teaches me something. And I think that the message is that, you know, that work and the film hopefully says something about larger, about what it means to be a human being alive and living, you know, in time and in space and right now. And, you know, I'm forever grateful for having been given the opportunity to experience that and to be able to make a film about it.
I really didn't expect to be profoundly moved by this particular film, and you did it. So thank you for that. And Matt, thank you also for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Marina Abramović, The Artist Is Present, debuted at Film Forum in New York on June 13th. It's worth seeing in a theater, definitely, but if you can't make it or aren't in New York at all, it'll be debuting on HBO on July 2nd. I really recommend seeing it. It's quite an amazing journey. I'll have the trailer up at mightymoviepodcast.com, and a link to the official website will be there as well. And we're going to be taking another hiatus of necessity, but we'll be back eventually. In the meantime, the Cinefantastique Spotlight is an ongoing concern, and there may be something else coming up. But do me a favor, if you've enjoyed these interviews and want them to continue, I'd really appreciate hearing from you. You can leave a message on any of the postings over at mightymoviepodcast.com or write me directly at dan@mightymoviepodcast.com. And thank you. And thanks as well for listening to this particular episode. Have a great weekend. This has been a production of Upstart Company NYC, copyright 2012, Dan Persons. All rights reserved. No unauthorized duplication permitted.